Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Man's Voice here on this nice Sunday afternoon. Hope everybody is having a good Sunday afternoon. Want to welcome the panel. Looks like most people are here ready to go, and that's always exciting. One of the things I would like to get started with is our president, it seems, has finally came out and said that Putin cannot remain in this in power, and is causing a lot of reaction around the world, especially in the United States and especially on different sides of the aisle. Let me jump in. So what do you think about our and what he's saying and what's going on? Let me start off with Don. What are you thinking?
You got that right, David. How you feel this afternoon? Everything is wonderful in sunny South Florida.
Oh, good.
Well, David, answer your question. We said it weeks ago. Putin cannot remain in office. He needs to be taken out. And Biden slipped and said it. He didn't slip and say it. It's a known fact. We can't operate like this. And I think there's going to be some covert action taken against him. If it's not already planned, because he's acting just like Hitler. And we should have moved faster on him. What's in the heart will come out of the mouth. And that's what happened with President Biden when he was speaking. And he was saying what a lot of other people wanted to say but just didn't have enough nerve to say. I dropped the mic.
Right. All right. Bruce, what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't disagree that Putin needs to be gone in one way or another. So I agree with Don on that part. What I don't understand is who's in charge over there at the White House. Biden says something three times in less than a week, and every time he says something, they have to bring out the cleanup crew to tell, well, that's not what he meant. That's not what he meant to say. He should have said this and that. Who's in charge over there? It boggles my mind a little bit that Biden doesn't, behind the scenes, say, look, I'm the president of the United States. And maybe he has, but it sure doesn't appear that way. And to, as you said, Don, I agree with the statement. That doesn't mean he's going to walk over there with a gun and shoot him. It just means his statement is he shouldn't be in office. And I don't know of many Americans that would disagree with that. Look at what he's doing. Uncoerced by a country, he's basically trying to level it to the ground. So I guess my frustration is that this constant correction of whatever significant thing Biden says. And all that does is make him and the United States either look confused or weak. And for the life of me, I don't understand why that keeps going on.
All right. Darius, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Bruce. It's, you know, the statement that he made was a bold one, and I like seeing the strength come from Biden. But then it looks bad when the administration has to come in behind them and walk it back. You know, asking or suggesting regime change in any our country is a provocation. It's just not U.S. policy for us to suggest we're doing things in a country like that. So when you do something like that, then Putin could take that as an invitation for someone to take him out, you know, to have him executed or moved by coup or force from office. And that's just not the kind of politics or international politics we want to get involved in. And there have been several situations where Biden has actually, you know, had to walk back statements that he's made. So, like I said, I like seeing the strength, but it shows that we're not a united front when you have disagreement or dissension, you know, within the administration itself. You know, even when you go back to Biden saying that that the sanctions weren't meant to deter, when everybody else in the administration was saying that those sanctions were meant to deter Putin. So, yeah, it's been constant.
Okay.
Biden says one thing, and his administration comes out and says something else.
All right, Darius, you're really low. I mean, we heard you, but not like loud and clear like usual. So maybe there's something you can do. But okay, what about Ron? What are your thoughts?
Thank you, David. Well, I think all in all, it was a very powerful speech. Nobody, I don't think, except for Biden, knows whether he meant to say what he did or not about Putin needs to be out of office. So whether or not it was, you know, misspeaking, only he will know that. But I think, like everybody has said so far, he probably said what everybody's been thinking. Now, my concern is that Putin may see that as a threat and say, oh, so the United States is going to be coming after me. So that's a declaration of war. And if it is, you know, then so be it. I mean, but personally, and I've heard others say this, I think we're already at war, whether we want to admit it or not. We don't have boots on the ground, but I think it's a matter of time before this conflict escalates to the point where we are going to have to get our military involved instead of just helping the Ukrainians out from the sidelines. I think we need to start doing more and helping out more. And sorry, I lost my train of thought here. And, you know, that's what the Ukrainians are yearning for. And I think, oh, that's the other thing I was going to say. I don't think this is a time since in essence, we are at war. I don't think it's a time for us to be divisive and start, you know, criticizing Biden. I mean, I think we all need to come together as a country. And I think everybody's in agreement that, you know, this is a horrendous, heinous dictator that needs to get the hell out of the way and you know, let the peace-loving people of the world, you know, who the hell does he think he needs to go and take complicated than what a lot of people understand? There's a lot of history there, but, you know, it's a autonomous country that he just took over or wants to take over. And that's not the way you operate in the modern world.
Right. Okay, Michael, what are your thoughts?
Hey, David, thanks for calling on me. I want to piggyback off what Ron said. First of all, I wish my good friend, my Republican friends on the panel would stop trying to make this a partisan issue, okay? We should be bipartisan on this one. We should come together as Americans on this one. Stop trying to make it about Republican versus Democrat on this particular issue. Please, this is an important issue. This is World War III we're talking about. This is not something we need to play with. In regards to what Biden said in his slip of the tongue, for those who remember when he was vice president, it's not the first time he's had a slip of the tongue to change policy. He had a slip of the tongue when he pushed Barack Obama back then to move on gay marriages. So Joe Biden always says the quiet part out loud. It's not the first time he's done that and made the mistake. Yes, there is a covert operation to take Putin out. Everybody knows that. It's clearly obvious that's the only option at this point. There's no other option to ending this other than a regime change in Russia. So Joe Biden said the quiet part out loud. But, yes, that does make it scary because you're right, Ron. Now Vladimir Putin can clearly take that as a declaration of war because technically it is a declaration of war saying, hey, I'm going to overthrow your government. The United States is planning to overthrow our government. That is kind of a declaration of war. So, yeah, I do kind of think we're already into World War III, to be honest with you. So let's just go ahead and draw the line and call it what it is. It's World War III. Let's do it.
When you say World War III, let's do it, what is it you're saying to do?
Well, I'm not a military advisor, but, I mean, we're going to have to go in there and put boots on the ground. We're going to have to go to war. We're going to have to a traditional war. And if we put in a no-fly zone, because I think that's what's coming next, it only makes sense right now at this point, that's the only way you're going to stop them is the no-fly zone. And if Joe Biden declares the no-fly zone, meaning you cannot fly airplanes over Ukraine, there's going to be some combat between NATO airplanes and Russian airplanes, and that's the war. So when I say let's do this, I mean let's do the war. What are the rules and the engagement of the war? I don't know. But, I mean, war is war. That's the only option at this point. Take Putin out. And in order to take Putin out, we got to go to war with Russia.
So you're saying
hey, David,
American young men and send them over there to be killed and slaughtered and do the opposite with their side to take Putin out. Is that what you're saying?
They don't have to be American men. Why can't we send other countries? There's 30 members of NATO. We're one. Like, we can 29 other countries can send their military over there. And we can back them with technology and weapons. Why do we got to send American boots?
So you're saying the Americans should pro the international market to send troops from all of the other countries to go in to Russia and wipe him out? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because the only other option is Russia's going to continue to send their troops to wipe out other countries, starting next with Poland and other NATO countries. So, yeah, it's either kill or be killed is the question you're asking me at this point. Yeah, that seems like the only option at this point is either kill or be killed.
Don, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, David, I agree with what Michael just said. However, I want to bring in remembrance of something was said, oh, I'd say 3 years ago, when South Korea dictator was flexing his muscle, and Donald Trump said, chill out, or it's going to be fire and brimstone. And he heard it, and it ended up being a tour of the demilitarized zone. So I don't think it was a slip of the tongue. I think Biden said the right thing. He said what everybody else has been saying. And I hope Putin heard it loud and clear.
So do you think Putin needs to become defensive? Or what do you, 'cause on the other side of the coin is Putin now hearing this, and I think we're all saying he's probably going to be coming after somebody or doing something. So what are you thinking is going to happen from this point on, Don?
If he
we can get revved up the war.
Wait, if he plays the fool card and come to the United States with any type of aggressive action, we're going to do like the Gap Band. We're going to drop the ball on you.
And then aren't you aware that on the other side of that coin we have somebody at our back door waiting to drop a bomb on us too? So Putin is in friendship with China. So you're talking about putting us in the middle of two bombs coming from both directions.
Well, China has got too much to lose by getting into a conflict with us. That's why they remained on the sideline, neutral. China has, I don't know if you know it or not, quite a bit of investment in the United States, including real estate especially. During the real estate crises in 2008, China bought most of the foreclosed bundled property in the United States, owned by China, and other investments in China. that China has made in the United States. So I don't think that they want to even get involved. They just want to sit back and let these two bulldogs play.
So why is the president of China and Putin having meetings all the time then? And why is North Korea now sending out missiles? It seems that China is not being quiet. They're actually talking to Russia. Now, I'm sure they're saying go in there and wipe them out so we can go in and take over more of the country.
David, I saw last week that the Chinese ambassador to the U.S. Went public in saying that they promote peace and they're against this invasion, and what they want is a peaceful settlement. That's the Chinese ambassador to the U.S. saying that. Now, whether people believe it or not, that's a whole nother story.
Let's hope that's the way that China, but okay. What are your thoughts, Darius?
So I agree with Don. China does have too much to lose. Can you hear me better now, David?
Yes, yeah, better.
Okay, good. They have too much to lose. I think China has almost $2 trillion of U.S. debt. So, destroying us, will come to a great loss to them economically, financially, not to mention we're the number one trade partner. So that's the card that we do hold. But I'm not at all fooled by China's actions. I know for a fact that they're secretly cheering on Russia. They want Russia to win. And we saw evidence of that by them actually accepting when all the rest of the world was banning acceptance of Russian currency, China decided to take it up. So they're pulling for Putin, but they have to do it behind the scenes. But they're not going to get in the middle of it. I said what Ron and Michael said earlier, though. You know, it can be seen as a provocation with what Biden is saying. And if that happens, then Putin may act. But the thing is, right now, it looks like, we don't have to get involved in this thing because the Ukrainians are doing an awesome job. I heard that the siege on Kyiv stalled out. And then there's also, the city that he did take, he had to pretty much demolish it. And there's still a resistance going on there. So I think if we just sit back and continue to provide, we need to provide Ukraine with the arms that they're asking for, and we need to allow Poland to provide them with the arms that they need. And I think they'll be able to handle this on their own.
All right. Let's move on. The Supreme Court, their examination of the Ketanji Brown Jackson. What are your thoughts on how that went? Because I've seen all kinds of different on that. Tell us, Ron, what are your thoughts on how she was talked to in the Supreme Court nomination?
Yeah, unfortunately, David, I haven't had a chance to see the whole thing, but I have seen the clips that they show on the news, obviously. And I have tried to be as bipartisan as I can by looking at liberal news and also the more non-liberal, I guess you could say, news such as Fox, although some people might not say Fox is conservative. But I my personal opinion is that the whole process, the whole system of electing a Supreme Court or not electing, but what's the word I'm looking for?
Nominating.
Thank you. Is a farce. I mean, it's turned into a joke. It's personal attacks, and it should never be about personal attacks. I mean, they should stay focused on what it is that she brings to the table as a Supreme Court nominee, and that's it. And some of the things that I did see on the news were ridiculous. What they were accusing her of, because if you dig deep enough, you will see that she really, you know, in terms of her ruling against people accused of pornography, she's very mainstream. I mean, it's not as radical as some of the right was trying to make it look. So I think the whole thing is a joke. She's going to be the Supreme Court justice anyway, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really matter, I guess. And I'm glad that finally there's another face in the Supreme Court that is representative of this country. I mean, I think it's long overdue, and I know what Bruce's opinions are about, you know, picking somebody just because of that, but I don't think that's the case here because I think she's more than qualified and probably overqualified, and also very proud that she's from the Miami area. So I don't know if she was born here, but I know she was raised here. So, but the whole thing is a joke, the way it's being handled. And I know it's happened the other way around, too, when Republicans have been nominated. So.
All right, Bruce,
I gotta jump in.
Wait a minute, Bruce. I want to ask you a question. Our former President Donald Trump has accused the Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson of being very disrespectful to the Republican senators at her confirmation hearing. Do you agree?
I don't see it as respectful, unrespectful. I see it as, first of all, Ron, I got to correct you. You can't put words in my mouth that are wrong. I respect you a lot, but I don't respect what you just said. I never implied that she was being nominated because she was just black and just a female. I've always
you were questioning whether
I've always said that they should be looking for the best qualified and big
yes.
bonus plus bells ring if she's a black woman. Fantastic. But they dilute her and demean her skill sets and her abilities by implying she's being picked for that as the main reason. So I think we agree on that. I just want to set that record straight. As far as, David, as far as them asking questions, and someone said, I don't know if it was Don or Michael or someone, said that implied personal attacks on Brown Jackson is not true. Yes, they're asking questions that are uncomfortable, and I will also admit, like the Democrats and the Republicans both do, is they ask questions to make their point and tear down someone from an opposite persuasion. They both do that. But what they were, a lot of them, if you listen to enough of it, they really want to know, they want the public to know how she feels on certain key issues that affect and make her a qualified Supreme Court justice. And one of the big things they were concerned about is child pornography. And yeah, they grilled her on it. I didn't see it. And every time they brought up a tough question, the race card comes up. And that's really unfair and consistent with the Democrats. They just constantly, if they don't have an intelligent answer, they throw up the race card, which means the race card, when it really should be used, is diluted to the point now that every time it's mentioned, people say, oh, yeah, right, whatever. And it's a disservice to people that really do suffer racism. So I don't see it changing, but it's constant. And if you look at the comparison and the way they handled the Republican nominees in the recent past, they went after his sex life, his high school book, how often he drinks each week, and it was totally the opposite and ridiculous in the way it was done. Personal attacks of Attorney Brown, not at all. Tough questions that you could easily throw that card up, I guess so, but that's not really what it is. They want people to know carefully and completely how she really feels. We all know she's going to get nominated and be a Supreme Court justice, so the only avenue they have to make those things known from the onset is to ask questions.
I think we should clear it up there, Bruce. It's Attorney Jackson, not Brown. It's Brown.
Right. And David, can I please rebut that?
It's Brown Jackson.
Yes.
Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, hey Bruce.
Yeah.
Okay, Bruce. First, I want to start with you said racism kept coming up with every question they would ask. It was Senator Marsha Blackburn, Republican senator, who asked her how would she and where is she on critical race theory, in which she implied critical race theory into the bench. Okay. Marsha Blackburn didn't ask anyone else the question about CRT. Why are you asking Ketanji Brown Jackson about CRT? Ketanji Brown Jackson's never weighed in on CRT, never brought up CRT, never mentioned CRT, meaning critical race theory. Marsha Blackburn asked her that question was a racist question. Okay, number two, Ted Cruz brought up a book full of babies and asked her, do you think these white babies are racist? Ketanji Brown Jackson has never ruled on babies, never made a decision on babies, never even brought up the word babies. Why would Ted Cruz interject that into his questioning? It's racist. Okay, I know guys like you don't see that as racist, but that's racist. Now, to the point earlier you said Joe Biden diluted her service, that's the word you use, by announcing that he's going to appoint a black woman. Well, by that same standard, all the white men prior to, does it dilute their service as well? Because they were only put on the bench because they were white men. So does it dilute their service as well, or does it only dilute the service of the black woman?
If it was for that reason, which is totally wrong, Michael, your anger is showing through again, as usual. They weren't put on the bench because they're white men.
Oh.
I think there was something.
They were absolutely put on there because they were white men, Bruce.
I guess the only word you didn't hear is, I should have said, maybe I didn't, is only because they were white men. That's not the reason at all. And for you guys to make a joke out of it is really sad, because that's not it at all. Has it been too late and too long for females to serve on that prestigious court? Yes. And there again, minorities? Yes. And now that it's finally happening, that's a good thing. But for you guys to imply the only reason, you're right back to it again. The only reason they got put on that court because they were a certain skin color is really sad.
So in 1865, when they were appointing Supreme Court justices, you mean to tell me they considered other race men? They considered black men and Mexican men were considered?
No, probably not.
Only white men, Bruce. Only white men.
So why is that funny? It's not funny. It's sad.
You know what, Bruce? I'm gonna ask you to do one thing.
Your anger continues to show through instead of your wisdom, which I know you have.
Hey Bruce, I'm gonna ask you to do me a favor and do everyone listening on this call and the participants on this call a favor. If you would only Google Cory Booker's statement concerning her and listen to it. And don't just listen to it for the words. Listen to it for the feeling and the spirit in which he's talking to her. And I guarantee you that you'll have a different look at this whole situation if you just Google Cory Booker's speech concerning her.
All right, gentlemen.
Hey, Darius, I would love to know, Darius, I would love to know, do you think the previous justices were put there just because
they were white men?
Let me
run this show, Michael. Step back a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, David. I apologize.
Yeah, I know. Because I have one of our listeners has jumped in with something I thought was we could talk about with this subject matter, and I wanted to get your opinions on it. She is saying that when black women come to top of the list of jobs, that most of them are married to white men. She said, "Is this something that is going to make our young black
women, young girls, think like that. She said, let me see. She said, I'm reading what she wrote. She's saying that Kamala Harris came, and now the first man is a Caucasian man. And Ms. Jackson, her, you know, so, and there are several others she brought up, and she's wondering why this is true. Do we think this is a way for young black girls to see black women? Let's get your thought on that, Ron.
Honestly, I didn't even know that Brown Jackson is married to a Caucasian man, so that's news to me. but you know, I don't see that that's an issue at all. I don't think that they're in the positions that they're in because they're married to a white man, if that's what you're implying. And if young black girls see that as a way to move up in the political world, I don't think that's the case at all.
All right. What about you, Darius?
Well, let me start off first by making a statement about Bruce and everybody laughing. What Bruce was saying was they weren't selected only because they were white. And I happen to agree with him. If you look at the qualifications of all the past Supreme Court justices, they were all qualified. So there was never a criteria for it only being white men. Like Michael said, only whites, and that's not what the criteria was. And what happened with Jackson, Judge Jackson, is she was specifically, Joe Biden specifically said he was going to select an African-American female, not the most qualified person. And that's where it brought about some doubt in terms of, or where it may have somewhat put a spot on her nomination. And I happen to agree with Bruce on that. And I don't think there is anything funny. That's factual. Now, in terms of the nominee being mistreated or personal attacks, like Bruce said, nobody asked her about her sex life. Nobody asked her about who she dated in high school. Nobody asked her about if she had any affairs. Nobody asked her about her drinking habits. They were asking her questions solely based on her judgments, strictly based on the cases that she submitted. And that's not racist. If you are coming before the Congress saying you want to be on the highest court in the land, it's only fair that some people ask you about your past rulings. There's nothing racist about that. And when you, like Bruce said, and I'm telling you this too, Michael, when you say everything is racist, then nothing is racist. So let's go with that. In terms of the white husband, I remember when Clarence Thomas got nominated, and even now still today people say, oh, Clarence Thomas is not really black because he's conservative and he has a white wife. I don't hear anybody on the Democrat side saying she's not black because she has a white husband. I don't hear anybody saying that. But as far as the impression that it makes on black girls, I'll say that I don't think that it bears any kind of pressure or any type of stereotype that they have to marry a white man in order to be successful in this country. But that's just, you know, me. I don't see that as a factor in anybody, not just someone being a nominee, but I don't see that as a factor on anybody.
Don,
can I reply? Because my Don. Name was invoked. Can I reply?
May I add just one thing before we do, Michael? Just today, there was a clip on TV, and I think it was Cory Booker, correct me if I'm wrong, that made the comment. David, you know, you thought he was so strong in his comments. He made the comment about Clarence Thomas that if he had had some kind of white powder rubbed on his face, you would have never known he was black. That is a terrible thing to say. I may not have the words exactly right, but it was pretty close. And I heard that today, and I said, wow. I mean, just because someone doesn't vote a certain Democratic way, they can't be black and independently think? That's crazy. That's all right.
Michael, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, definitely. I want to address real quick, Bruce, what you just said. The point is, yeah, in the black community, and I think I speak more for the black community than you do, Bruce. So for the black community, how we feel in regards to Clarence Thomas, he doesn't think like the majority of us think. So, yeah, we align him with the white community. That's why we consider him an Uncle Tom. So that's to that point. And to Darius, to your point, you said you've never met a Democrat who stood up and barked at Ketanji Brown Jackson and Kamala Harris for having white spouses the way they barked at Clarence Thomas for having a white spouse. Well, here, you just met one. I have a problem with Ketanji Brown Jackson and Kamala Harris and their white spouses because, in my personal opinion, there's a prerequisite to be a black person to succeed in government. You have to have a white spouse in order to move up in government. And that's a perfect example, those three. It's not just the two Democrats. It's Clarence Thomas as well. I don't think he would have ever got the nomination from George Bush had he not been married to a white woman. I don't think Kamala or Ketanji would have gotten where they were had not they been married to white men. And I think that's unfair and misfortunate. And, yes, it's sending the signal to the black girls in my community that if you want to go forward in life, you got to marry a white man. And Clarence Thomas is sending the signal to the black man, and so are all those NBA guys who marry white girls. They're sending that signal, hey, if you want to go forward in life, you got to marry a white woman. So you just met a Democrat who has a problem with both of those issues, Darius.
And, you know, we have to look at the time. We have to also look at the time that we're talking about. Let's go back to the time of Clarence Thomas. When Clarence Thomas was nominated to the Supreme Court bench, we were going through a lot of racial turmoil. And here's a man that totally forgot where he came from. He climbed the affirmative action ladder, Bruce. There was a ladder called affirmative action that we as black men and black women had to go through to rise in corporate America and also in politics. He climbed it. And then once he got to the top, he burned the steps. He burned the ladder.
What do you mean by that, John? What do you mean by that?
Here's what I mean by that. When it came to voting concerning affirmative action, he totally voted against it, Bruce. He didn't even vote for it. But that's the way he got there. He got there.
When anyone becomes a Supreme Court justice, they're not supposed to vote black, white, purple, green, red, or yellow. They're supposed to vote based on the founding fathers and the messages and the creeds that we live under in the state, in the United States.
He was not placed on the bench.
It doesn't do anything positive.
He was not placed on the bench because he was solely qualified. He was placed on it because he was black, Bruce.
Well, okay. Let's say I don't disagree with that. Then great. What an opportunity for him to, in your definition, prove everybody wrong that I'm not an excellent black man on the bench. I'm an excellent man, well qualified to be on the bench. And if you talk to anybody now about Clarence Thomas, other than far, far certain positions that will stay nameless, they would agree. He's a great Supreme Court justice.
All right.
First Supreme Court justice in the history of the court, okay? It was a slap in the face to replace him with Thurgood Marshall, who Thurgood Marshall was one of the greatest American attorneys of all time, who aligned himself with the majority of the black people in this country. Clarence Thomas does not align himself with the majority of the black people in this country. The majority of black people in this country support the Democratic Party. They don't support the Republican Party. I'm going to leave it there.
You're supposed to represent the all parties, not the black party, not the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party. And I know each one have their different slants on things. You and I know that, Michael. But that, what he's ideally supposed to represent, each one of them, is all the Americans and all things that are fair, equitable in regards to the laws that they are supposed to enforce. That's the Supreme Court, unless we change the definition.
All right, gentlemen, let's move on to something else. Let's move around the table, but there was one other thing I wanted to put in. The money that Trump was raising, but let's go somewhere else. Let's talk about the new law that Biden is trying to put out where it's canceling $17 billion in student loans. I think that's an important part for America. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
David, I don't know too many details about it. I do know some people that will personally benefit from it, including one of my brothers. But I don't know if it's an economic stimulus in any way. I'm sure that you can make the case if it is, but college is not cheap in this country, and I think forgiving the debt is actually a good thing. That I'm all for it.
Right. So what are your thoughts on that one, Darius? Biden is trying to pass a law that would cancel $17 billion in student loans. And I think a lot of people have been suffering because of student loans. It might help the world. Do you think it's something to help people or not?
No, it doesn't. It may help economically in the short term, but I think the abolishment of any debt, is a sign of poor character. I think it creates an entitlement society, or even furthers the entitlement society that we're going, and it shows a lack of character. If you sign a form agreeing that if you give me this amount of money, I'm going to pay you back, and then after you get your degree and things don't turn out the way you thought, oh, you don't get the six-figure job that you thought you were going to get, oh, it's too difficult because I can't pay my student loan and buy the car that I want or take the vacations I want or buy the shoes that I want, then somebody should just eliminate that debt for me. What type of society are we creating here, guys? Yeah, because it's hard. Guess what? Me paying my mortgage is hard. Somebody come and eliminate that for me. You know, me paying for my kids to go to school is hard. Somebody come and eliminate that for me. And what does it say to the people who paid off their student debts, the people who sacrificed, the people who worked two jobs? I joined the Army because I wanted to go to school. I could have just taken out student loans and gone to school, but I decided to take that route. So are you telling me that the person who says, hey, I don't want to join the military, I don't want to be involved in civil service, I'm just going to take out a loan? Should they be able to just take out a loan and have no responsibilities whatsoever? What are we teaching our youth? Not to mention the debt that we're saddling even further on the U.S. economy. We're already experiencing inflation. We're already experiencing the diminishing of the U.S. dollar. And so we're going to tack on even more debt than what we have now? This is crazy. This administration is crazy. And this is why we're in the position that we're in right now. Nobody pays for anything. Nobody's responsible for anything. Nobody makes any hard choices. Nobody works hard. We just give you everything. And pretty soon, that's going to amount to the destruction and the fall of this country.
There are a lot of people who have loans who will like this, but they're paying their bills and they are buying cars and doing everything else. This just helps the economy on the reverse of it. It is helping the economy to spend the money in the economy that they would pay off loans with. What are your thoughts on this, Don?
Nobody forced them to take out the loans, David. Nobody made them do this. This was a choice.
David, I kind of feel different than what Darius just said. There are parents that could not afford to send their children to school. Like my wife and I, there was a time when we weren't making the kind of money that we're making now. And we had to take out long student debt to send our daughter to the University of Michigan. It was a very expensive school. Now, we could have sent her to the college local community college, but she had a desire to go to Princeton and to go to University of Michigan and get a master's degree. And that's the way we chose to go. And we took out student loans. And we are still finishing up paying for those student loans. If it had not been for those student loans, we would not have been able to take advantage of it, Darius. And I thank God we did it.
Okay. What are your thoughts on this, Ron?
You already called on me, David.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Michael?
Well, I agree with Darius on part of it, but not all of it. I agree with Darius is how do you just pick and choose which debt you're going to wipe away. Like, I got a lot of debts I would like the government to just wipe away. Like, why are you going to just wipe away these student loan debts? Like, yeah, they didn't. Nobody put a gun to your head and told you to take out that loan. You signed the paper and said you're going to pay it back. You should be paying it back like everybody else who took out a loan. So I kind of agree with Darius on that. Now, I do agree that the loan was a bogus loan and the loan shouldn't have been so high and all the interest rates shouldn't have been so high. I do agree that there was some fugaziness going on with writing the loan. So maybe you can forgive some of the loan, but not all of the loan. I don't think that's really a good idea.
I think the government is just saying this is a way to help our people, especially our young people, to move up in their in the world. So what are your thoughts on this, Bruce?
Well, I kind of like what Don said. Thanks for calling on me, David. Don said the loan was important to him and his family, but I didn't hear him once say, I want it paid off. For me. He's taken on the responsibility, as unpleasant as it is. I've had to do the same kind of struggle in that regard, and it's ingrained in him, I think, and in a lot of us, that I take the loan, I'm going to pay it back. I agree with Michael. It'd be nice if the terms were more reasonable at times in certain circumstances, but you make the choice, as Darius said, and you get the benefits of that choice, and that loan was part of the formula to get there. You have to repay that loan, and I don't understand that when we say, well, if we forgave some for the youth now, how do we know some of those youth haven't made poor financial choices and burned a lot of money that could have gone towards paying off a loan? I'm not implying all are that way, but some are, as we were when we were young. So this discriminant of paying off a loan to boost the economy, can each one of us at the point we are in our career or in our retirement, can we get that too? I'll boost the economy. I'll sign a paper that says if you give me $5,000 a year, I have to spend every penny of it on the economy. I'm there. Give me the paper. I'll sign it. So I'm just illustrating that it's fairness. You can't pick and choose and then take away, as I think Darius said, the responsibility of paying back debts or promises or loans.
So you don't like the government helping our students? Yes. Go ahead.
What?
Can I respond to what
sure.
you and Don said earlier? Okay,
sure.
So Don made a very key statement, and he said we could have gone to community college, we could have chosen other options, but we decided to do this.
Yeah.
It was a choice. We have the false dichotomy now when you hear the argument, people saying, well, kids can't go to college. That's not true. I have a daughter who has her master's degree. She joined the Air Force because she didn't want to have to pay for school. She didn't want to have to take out student loans. That's a choice. There's community college that you can pay for classes as you go. That's a choice. There's also jobs. If you will go, like if you're a teacher and you decide you agree to teach in an urban neighborhood, a rural neighborhood where there's a shortage of teachers, they'll pay for your college. There are degrees where if you decide to be a nurse, and you're going to serve in a rural hospital, they'll pay for your college. What I'm saying is there are options. So people who took out student loans, they made a choice. It wasn't like there was no other choice. And because they made that choice, then they should be responsible for that. They should have to pay for that.
Hey, Darius, you contradicted yourself, though. Like I said, I agree with you about that, but you're contradicting yourself. You just said that your daughter joined the military, so she was able to be able to go. And you said you're able to go. That's picking and choosing the same way they're picking and choosing on who Biden's going to wipe the debt away from. Now you're picking and choosing who I'm going to give money to go to college, meaning if you join the military, you get to go. If you go teach, you get to go. I don't think there should be picking and choosing on either side. So you kind of contradict, you kind of being a hypocrite with that one, Darius.
Well, no, what I'm saying, Michael, is the choice that she made is not free. Nobody gave her. She made a choice to serve. She earned her degree. I went in the Army, which means I served my country. I earned the right to receive GI benefits. So what I'm saying is the choice is not that you don't have to do anything for it, not that the government gave this to her. She earned it. The government didn't give it to me. I earned it. I worked for it. You can go to community college. You can pay for it as you go. And you can choose to serve in civil service or the military, and you could have the government will pay for that, but you're earning it. It's not a gift. You're providing a service.
All right. Let's move on. I want to go around the table a little bit, but before we do that, there's 8 minutes left in the show, so I want to get your opinion on one thing, because in the United States, history was made on Wednesday when the Kentucky Wild Health Gnomes drafted Alexis Hopkins, the first woman ever drafted by an American professional baseball team for an on-field role. This, according to the Atlantic League, that this is the first female that a national baseball team has drafted to be part of their team. What are your thoughts on that one, Bruce?
First of all, what is the position that she was drafted for?
A catcher? I don't know. They said catcher was the only thing.
An active player?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that. I'm fine with that. There should not be a problem breaking the walls, shooting out of the box that says it can only be men. In this case right now, black and white and other nationalities, men being only. So if she breaks into that field and women become in the team's view, valuable assets and contributors to that team and making it win, I think it's wonderful that it's a male or female. I have no problem with it at all.
So you think all national sports should be co-ed?
No, I didn't say that. If you asked me about one specific situation,
I know, but the way you're saying it is that it was good that she got in. That so, then if a female gets into football, then you're going to say the same thing.
I would say no to that general question. No, because we're kind of up to our eyeballs in some situations right now about classifying who's male, who's female, who should we have separate sports, should we not? In some cases. I think that is appropriate, but are there some sports possibly that the breaking down the barriers are appropriate? Another one I would give you is NASCAR drivers. Some women have tried, come and gone, but there's others in it now. So they decided that male-female isn't a big enough factor or isn't any factor in that sport. But I don't think every sport in every situation, I don't think that applies. Yeah,
okay. Ron, what are your thoughts?
I don't have a problem with it at all across the board. I think if it's a traditionally a man's sport and there's a woman that is as good or better and strong enough, then by all means, I don't care what the sport is. I was thinking here, you know, is there a sport where I would think that that's inappropriate? And no, I mean, I think if you can do it for one sport, you can do it for all. And personally, I would love to see Serena Williams play, you know, Rafael Nadal, for example, in tennis. I would love to see, men play. play women in tennis, for example. So I think it actually would be good for the sport.
Okay, Don, what are your thoughts?
I agree with what Ron said so eloquently. However, I have a different topic I want to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. This pandemic, David, affected us in a real dramatic way. And it attacked us in so many different areas. First of all, it attacked us in our health. It attacked us in our mind. Even the mindset of people prior to COVID is totally different after COVID. It attacked us spiritually. We are spirits. We have a soul and we live in a body. There were churches that were closed because they couldn't go to church because of COVID. It attacked our families. I know so many families that were destroyed, lack of communication, disagreement, whether I take the vaccine or not. And it attacked our careers. People lost jobs. And most of all, it attacked our financial picture and our financial stability. And I just want to say, as I talked about all those certain areas, we have been under severe attack, my brothers and our listeners to the man's voice. Make sure you address that and address those issues with your family because we need recovery bad. I'm going to leave it like that.
All right. Who else wants to jump in on this conversation? Darius, what are your thoughts? Who is that?
Hey, David, if I could, real quick, I just want to say something about what Ron said about he would love to see Serena Williams play Rafael Nadal in a game. That's cool for that sport, but you don't want to see Miley Cyrus playing Tom Brady in that sport. So I think to always try to say men should always go up against women and women should go against men, I think that's one of those things that certain people push too hard on. I think we should separate sports. Men go against men, women go against women.
All right. Darius, what's your thoughts?
Okay. All right. So I want to go back to what Ron said, too. I made this statement, Ron, a while back that no woman equally equipped or trained could beat any man in any sport. You don't have to wonder about Serena. You did. But I'm telling you, you don't have to wonder about Serena and Venus. Because there was already a match where they played the number 203 ranked player in tennis. He swept both Serena and Venus. So there is no contest when it's a man equally compared to a woman. And we see that when you look at the swimming, the Ivy League swimming situation. I can't remember the gentleman's name, and I call him a gentleman because he is. But you can't – there was nobody that even came close. He lapped those ladies that he was swimming against, except for in one event in the 100, which clearly he did it. He came in last place on purpose, but they didn't even come close to beating this guy. He swept everybody and he even lapped the number two challenger. So other than sports like driving with Danica Patrick that we see, stuff like that, when you're talking about athlete per athlete versus athlete, there's no comparison. There's no woman that can beat a man in any physical athlete, any sport, any physical sport. So I want to ask, though, David said the first woman in baseball. David, I was wondering if you could define a woman for us because you're the Supreme Court nominee couldn't. So I'm wondering maybe you can define a woman.
Well, if you don't know, I'm afraid you got to go back to your parents and ask them to sit down and have a conversation with you, my friend.
I didn't say I didn't know. I asked if you could define one. I didn't say I didn't know what a woman was. She couldn't define one. So I'm wondering if you can define a woman.
What I can define is this show will be back on next week at 6 o'clock. I'm happy that everyone was here to join us. And We're all friends, guys. We'll be back next week. Have a great week, guys.
Have a great week, guys, and exit stage right.
Watch the Oscars tonight.
Are you kidding me? No way.